Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Well, good evening and welcome to USCHO Live for Tuesday, February 17th, 2015. I'm Ed Trefsker. Jim Connolly is alongside. And before we get to anything else, we do want to mention that throughout the rest of the season, we'll be sponsored by the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29 and continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. And I know you have a date with champions, Jim, and are looking forward to the NCAAs as things wind down here in the regular season.
And I think this year I probably especially look forward to it being in my backyard in Boston. It's I think about 8 miles from my house to the TD Garden, and I know that 1998 and 2004 were two really great championships held in the city, and look forward to it being back here. And I think that whichever teams make it here, the one thing that they are guaranteed is a great experience, and that's something that this hockey market will always deliver. So I can't wait for it. There's still a few weeks in the regular season, some playoffs and all that sort of stuff to go through. But once that NCAA field is announced, I think all of us will be excited.
Well, as usual, we've got a few interesting things to talk about. And this week's polls, and again, a juggling at the top, led to some interesting discussion between you and Matthew Semisch this week in USCHO.com's weekly column TMQ, standing for Tuesday Morning Quarterback. And right now, it seems like the juggling at the top and no clear-cut favorite may portend a wide-open NCAA playoffs this year. At least that's what you and Matt, were talking about today.
Yeah, I think that it's realistic that you could have another field. And, we're a couple of years removed from Yale, which made it really on the bubble, had to wait till the final game of the final playoff series, which was the CCHA back then, to be played to find out if they were even in the field. And then they went on and ran the table with some incredible wins over, I believe, Minnesota, North Dakota, UMass Lowell, and Quinnipiac to win a national title. And I believe that, yes, you have some very strong teams at the top. And Minnesota State is leading the pairwise. They've been up near the top of our poll, if not at the top. North Dakota is a fantastic team. I think Boston University is wonderful. I think Nebraska, Omaha, Minnesota, Duluth, Miami, they're all very good teams. But you look at the teams that are on the outside looking in right now. You're talking about Michigan, Vermont, UMass Lowell, St. Cloud State, a Northeastern team that is so hot right now. It's almost ridiculous, despite the fact that they started 0-8-1. They're now 14-11-4. All of these teams are good hockey teams, quality opponents. One team that I see, UMass Lowell, they're on the outside of the bubble. And they took – BU needed overtime and a come-from-behind victory to beat them a few weeks ago. You're talking about one of the top teams in the country, against a team that is bubble-ish to this tournament. And if one of these bubble teams that's right now on the outside looking in gets in around 15 or 14 or 13 and, in the actual field, there's no reason that they couldn't take a number four seed in the tournament and run the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, now another thing that I think has been a little bit a little bit of a point of contention, and certainly social media blowing up today about this, is the mention about Robert Morris and people saying, hey, maybe Atlantic Hockey really shouldn't have a team in these. And I think both you and I would disagree very strongly with that statement. Certainly the first thing that comes to mind is like, okay, well, see, if you leave out Atlantic Hockey, then let's leave three other teams home because you'll only have a 12-team tournament.
Well, that's number one, and that's the reality. Is the only reason we have a 16-team tournament is because Atlantic Hockey started up back in, I guess it was 1997-98. They were the MAC back then, but you know the creation of that league brought, at that point, I believe it brought 10 or so teams to college hockey. Many of those have become defunct. Iona, Fairfield, they ring a bell to many of us. College Hockey America followed suit. Some of those teams are now combined into what is now Atlantic Hockey. But the reality is that there is not a big difference between the number one team in Atlantic Hockey and, say, the number four team in the WCHE or the number four team in the ECAC or the number four team in Hockey East. There are some very, very good teams in Atlantic Hockey that have given a lot of problems. Yes, they've had some struggles out of their conference, but we're still at a point that Atlantic Hockey doesn't get a ton of home games when it comes to non-conference. I don't know what the breakdown is. My days of covering that league are long gone, but back when I covered it, it was something like 90% of the games of non-conference were played on the road. I think that the gap has been closed, but I wouldn't be surprised to learn that 65% of the games are played on the road for these teams when you talk about non-conference play. I look at Robert Morris. What you can't just piecemeal together a 25-5 record. That's 20 wins out of 30 games and only 5 losses. I don't care where you are in the pairwise. Right now they're 24th in the pairwise, but you're talking about a few wins away from raising that RPI and making them somewhere around 15 or 14 in the pairwise. That's how close they are to being just put into the national picture.
Yeah, and on that point of the pairwise, really you have to remember that a lot of that is the RPI. And most of the RPI is out of your control. It's your opponent's record or your opponent's other opponents of yours.
Yeah,
and you can't control that.
Yeah, it goes back to the fact that, 70% of your schedule is your league, and their league in an overall sense has not been strong out of conference. But that doesn't mean that they haven't been strong. And people have pointed out that they, didn't have exactly the toughest schedule. I think they have something like the 55th or 57th strongest schedule. Okay, it's not the strongest schedule, but they're winning the games. It doesn't matter. You still have to go out and win the games. I can look at a lot of teams that don't have the strongest schedule and don't have 20 wins right now. So if Robert Morris is to make this tournament, I wouldn't want to play them. I think that they're a dangerous team. I think they're going to be a tough opponent. We know the type of team that Derek Schooley puts out in the ice. It's a very hard-working team. They have some very skilled players. I think a Corey Wido, one of the best scorers in the country right now, and he'll score against any team in the country. It doesn't matter who it is. If he goes out and has a 3-goal game in a national tournament, you better believe that it's going to be a tough game for the opponent to win. So I look at this and say, with how wide open all of this is anybody that gets in. There could be somebody, say Alaska, wins the WCHA tournament and makes it in. I'd be afraid to play Alaska. It's a tough out. Anybody that gets into this field, there just isn't a team that's sitting in that number one seat that is that dominant that you can't sit there and say, boy, it's not going to be, it's going to be a cakewalk. There's not going to be a cakewalk for any team in any game of this year's tournament.
We haven't had number one seeds just waltz through. And there's nothing to say that would happen this year. One last thing about Robert Morris. They do have strong goaltending, but their first line, you mentioned Cody Wido, the line mates Zach Lynch and Scott Jacklin combined have 101 points this season through 30 games for them.
Unbelievable numbers. find, you know, there's probably 3 to 4 lines in the country. I think Boston University's top line is up in that range because you have both Rodriguez and Eichel that both have over 40 points right now. But there's not going to be a lot of lines in the country that are over 100 points. There are very good teams in this country where their top line right now doesn't even have 50 points combined. So I just worry, you know, you look at the number one team that's going to, you know, take that crown of being the number one seed into the entire tournament, and your first game is likely to be against Robert Morris. I wouldn't think it's a bonus. I wouldn't think it's a big advantage to get to play Robert Morris. I think that a team like that will come into that game with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, knowing that they're not getting the respect, and we've seen it this week with the little bit of discussion we created with TMQ. I'd love to be in that locker room and have the opportunity to battle for not just the right to win a national championship, but for the right to just show everybody that you belong. And that's all Atlantic Hockey teams really have every year to, you know, when they walk into that tournament, is the ability to show everybody that your spot in that tournament was not just an automatic win.
Well, I'll be able to tell you a little bit better next week about Robert Morris, as I should see them this weekend. They, by the way, are taking on an RIT team whose top line is combined for 104 points. So that should be pretty fun to see that matchup.
Pretty good numbers. Like I said, I don't think there's a lot of teams in the country that can say that. So that's pretty good numbers right there.
Well, getting back to the poll and the jumbling at the top and the lack of real dominance, I guess this is probably what we can expect the rest of the way out. It was another week where most of the teams in the top 10 had a blemish on their schedule.
Yeah, I want to see one team just take control of the rest of their season. And it's much easier said than done. But, you know, last year we had Boston College did it. They went on an unbelievable run, and it wasn't until the last day of the regular season that they kind of faltered. That's when they lost to Notre Dame, and then they lost their first-round quarterfinal playoff series to the same Notre Dame team 2 weeks later. But we really haven't seen a team just go on an unbelievable run at this point. I don't remember what the longest winning streak is, but I don't think it's over 10 games. I don't think anybody has had a winning streak. Maybe an unbeaten streak that's gotten up into that range, but I don't think we've had a winning streak that long. I'm waiting for somebody to stand up and say, hey, we're the team to beat. Nobody has done that thus far. So until some team is able to do that, and I don't think that it's realistic that we're going to see that, but until that time, I think you just can expect every week the top 10, you know, 6 or 7 or 8, maybe even 9 of those top 10 teams are going to have some sort of blemish on their schedule.
Well, talking about running away with things, it's not like last season where everybody knew Johnny Gaudreau was going to be the Hobey Baker Award winner about in October. Maybe I exaggerate a little bit, but it seems like that was the case all the way through. A couple of names that are being bounced around, some names that you brought up. Of course, we talked a little bit about Jack Eichel, but also Daniel Ciampini from Union is running away with Eichel as the top two scorers in the country. Are there any other names out there that are really going to be dominant, or is this going to come down to a very close vote amongst the Hobey voters at the end?
It's going to be tough to tell, and the one great thing I like about the Hobey is the fact that after they narrow it down to 10 candidates, that the actual vote is until after the regional. So guys are going to have a chance to make their mark. I look at Kevin Waugh at Northeastern. I mentioned how well they have been playing lately. He's been playing some unbelievable hockey. His numbers over the last few weekends are pretty dominant. He had a 4-point game last Friday night. Ended up with a 7-point weekend. I think he's got 10 points in his last 4 games. It's 7 goals in his last 8 games. So he's starting to come on. You know, at the same time, you can just look right at the top. You mentioned Ciampini, but Vecchione at Union is putting up almost equal numbers to Ciampini. Evan Rodriguez at BU is putting up almost equal numbers to Jack Eichel. Now, these guys are all playing on lines together, and sometimes you're benefiting from your line mate. But you talked about RIT, Matt Garbowski. Somebody has to give him some attention as well, with 21 goals at this point. Jimmy Vesey over at Harvard, Corey Wideo at Robert Morris. There are a number of players out there who will be in the conversation. But at this point, the story of the year has been Jack Eichel. And until, you know, a week ago, him and Ciampini were neck and neck in the points race. Eichel has taken a little bit of a lead. He's got a 5-point lead just because of the fact that he's put up, I think it's 6 points in his last three games. But I still see that these two players really going down to the wire, you know, neck and neck in terms of points. They are probably your two most talented players. But there are a number of other names that are going to have to be thrown in there just because of the fact that despite Ciampini and Eichel being excellent players and having phenomenal seasons, neither one of them has really just said, I'm Johnny Gaudreau and I'm the only guy you have to worry about for the Hobie Baker. Mm-hmm. Because I think that there is so much talent among some of these top 10 players. If one of them catches a lot of fire from now until the regionals or even their conference tournament, you're going to have throw those names into the hat and wonder if anybody else deserves consideration.
In the discussion, does the success of the team come into play? For example, Eichel on a BU team that is soaring this year, and meanwhile, Union in a down year after the national championship last season.
I think it always does, Ed. You know, and I think that the guys who at least their team makes the NCAA tournament have a lot better chance. The Greg Carey last year at St. Lawrence, I think a lot of the fact that he didn't get as much attention was the fact that his team was eliminated, I believe, either in the first round or the conference quarterfinals in the ECAC, and there was no hope of going to the NCAA tournament. So you're playing, first off, you're playing less games, which is, that's a frustrating part in itself. But at the same time, you're just not playing on the national stage. You're not playing at the time of year when people are thinking about the Hobie Baker, you're not playing when the actual voters are making that vote. And I think that when you put all of that together, I do believe that success of a team matters, and it matters a lot. So I think if your team is not in the Frozen Four, or at least, you know, went to the regional finals in the NCAA tournament, it's very hard. I don't have it off the top of my head. I don't know how often it's happened, but I'd like to go back and find the last player to win the Hobie Baker whose team didn't make the NCAA tournament. You might have to go all the way, way back with that, because I can't think of anybody right off the top of my head.
Well, Jim, I'm just noticing via social media that the discussion about Robert Morris is blowing up on talk radio in Pittsburgh. So that's nice to know that it's a big enough story back in the home area for Robert Morris. One other thing that I wanted to bring up while we have the opportunity, we talk a lot about College Hockey Inc. and its work behind the scenes, for example, with Penn State establishing its program a couple of years ago, and even just recently with Arizona State establishing its program. But a report broke today via an independent student newspaper at New York University, and a very well-researched and quoted article, as far as I could see, about NYU adding a Division III program, quite possibly. That's been talked about for a while. But what I found very interesting in it was comments from Mike Snee, executive director of College Hockey Inc., and talking about the benefits of adding a Division III program at NYU. So it was interesting to me to see the activity of College Hockey Inc., not just at the premier Division I level, but all across college hockey.
Well, when you think about that, there's a very necessary reason for College Hockey Inc. to be involved, because you're tapping into the New York metropolitan market, and that's something that college hockey really doesn't have a lot of footprint in. You know, the Iona existed just outside New York for a little while, but you really can't put your finger on a team that touches that market. And we've seen that when games are played down in the New York area, Madison Square Garden being the number one venue, and they've had some BU Cornell games, Harvard Yale, and they pack the place. So the alumni bases that are down there have a lot of desire to watch college hockey. So there's some success. Is there a reality that maybe college hockey at a Division I level could take some sort of a footprint in New York City at some point? If that were to ever happen, that just, it's a game changer. It's too big of a media market to not just stand up and take note, because, you know, you're talking about a team that could be, part of fodder for New York Daily News and the New York Times and newspapers and media outlets that are just massive. So even though it's Division III, NYU's move to add college hockey is huge. It's the right market. It's the right place. So I'm not surprised to see Mike Sneed and College Hockey Inc. involved, and I'm sure that that's not where the conversation ends for them.
Well, Jim, it's time for us to take a break. We'll bring in our first guest, and that's Michigan State head coach Tom Anastas. And that will be when we return. You're listening to USCHO Live from USCHO.com.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. From U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden.
Score!
Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker along with Jim Connolly.
And as we wind down toward the end of the regular season, one league that has a pretty crazy battle among four teams at the top is the sixth team Big Ten Conference. And right up there is a Michigan State team that has played some very, very good hockey as of late. We're joined by their head coach, Tom Anastas, right now. Tom, good evening and welcome on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Your team playing some very good hockey of late, coming off a two-game home sweep against what everybody maybe is a tiny bit surprised, but I guess not overly surprised, a very good Penn State team that has been right up at the top of the Big Ten standings all season. Talk a little bit about those games, a 3-0 win last Friday and then a tighter 3-2 win last Saturday night.
It was a good weekend for us. We thought it was a pretty important one for us going into the weekend. Over the past 3 weeks, we had swept Ohio State at home, and that was a good weekend for us. And over 2 weeks, we played two games with Michigan and split. And so as the Big Ten race was kind of playing itself out, we really felt going into that home weekend with Penn State, we were either going to put ourselves in a position to maybe compete for a top two spots in the league, or we might fall back. And so, fortunately, we did put two real good games together. And that team's a good team. They've been a high scoring team, all season long with one really hot line in particular. And so, we were pretty pleased with the outcome of the two games. And now we look to this weekend.
I look at your numbers since the holiday break and games where you have given up less than three goals, and there have been a number of them, have been wins for the most part. I believe you had 1-2-1 loss in there. Obviously, defense is key, and everybody knows that, but Jake Hildebrand, one of the rare goaltenders who has played every minute of your season thus far, he has obviously been a player you have depended on a good deal this season. Just some comments on his contributions.
Well, Jake's really grown into his own you know, as a junior goaltender. He's had lots of playing experience the last 2 years, and frankly, you know, last year and previous to that, we relied on him a great deal. This year, he's not seeing the number of shots and even the number of quality shots, and so, you know, when he's called upon to make big saves, he's really been consistent and has stepped up for us. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is as good in his position as anyone in the Big Ten and right up there in the country, in my opinion. He gives lots of confidence to his teammates, and he's providing lots of leadership on our team. So, you know, we think right now he's playing as well as he's played since he's been a Spartan, and I think his best days are yet to come.
Tom, you mentioned that he has seen less shots this year. Has there been more of a conscientious effort from the defensive side of the puck as well to try to play better in your zone and limit those opportunities?
You know, I wouldn't say there's a more conscientious effort. I think we've been pretty conscientious in our effort to do that. I just think we're getting better. You know, much like our opponent this weekend, Wisconsin, 2 years ago, after we were coming off in my first season, we were coming off an NCAA tournament appearance. We lost 11 players from that team. And anytime you interject so many new guys, and in fact, of 8 defensemen, we lost 6 of them. And so we had a lot of youth, a lot of inexperience back there. And so we've gone through the growing pains, and I think we're just getting better. We're getting stronger. We're getting more confident. We're playing together better. I think guys are falling into their roles and understand what the expectations are. And I think we're doing a better job of not just defending, but I think possessing the puck. I think our puck possession time is way up. In all 3 zones, as a matter of fact. I think that's making a big difference in our ability to successfully defend.
We're talking with Tom Anastas, the head coach of Michigan State. And Tom, you're now in just year number 2 of the Big Ten, but how has the adjustment been for not just Michigan State, but for all 6 of the schools and the campuses and everything that goes around with Big Ten hockey?
I think it's been really good. You know, obviously the landscape changed substantially, and you know, I really felt at the time when the dust settled, everybody would kind of find their place, and I think that's what's happening across the country. And same in the Big Ten. You know, we have 6 teams. We're playing a good balanced schedule. We get to play every team twice at home and twice on the road. I think the fans have really adapted to it. I know at Michigan State, we're playing in front of capacity crowds in Big Ten play in particular. And you know, the fans really relate to it, because really every other sport on our campus, all 25 of them now, you know, are playing against Big Ten competition. So the resources the league is putting into the hockey, the visibility it's bringing to hockey and the Big Ten network, both in games and ancillary programming has really been a nice touch. And so, you know, I'm really optimistic about the future of the Big Ten. And I know our guys in particular really enjoy playing in it.
Tom, you mentioned restructuring with the advent of Arizona State next year and maybe some more efforts behind the scenes from College Hockey Inc. No doubt there is going to be some continued realignment. Do you have any thoughts on what that might look like and really its effect on college hockey?
You know, I could only speculate, and I don't really have any basis for the speculation. You look at our sport, and you recognize that I think there was a lot of reaction to when Penn State added hockey, and that really kind of launched Big Ten hockey. And, you know, the CCHA obviously eventually dissolved, and the WCHA is a completely different look, and a new league was formed, and all those sorts of things. And I think when everything settles down, people are going to come back to the same realization that always existed is, you know, the reason you create a league is to try to create a scheduling alliance to compete. And, you know, in our sport, it's important to be as economically feasible as you can be, just like most sports, probably outside of, you know, major Division I football and basketball. And so, you know, I don't know if economics, which oftentimes dictates the direction people take, will at some point come into play or not. But, you know, I know lots of people speculate about those kinds of things. I think, you know, you mentioned CHI, and Kyle Chalky Inc.'s doing an awesome job of trying to foster continued dialogue about the sport and get it, you know, get ADs or get certain schools kind of thinking hockey, at least in the back of their mind. And I think planting those seeds now could take, you know, a decade or more to germinate. I know Penn State was trying to find a funding source for years and years and years, and it finally came to fruition. So I think that organization is doing a terrific job for college hockey, and hopefully we'll continue to see growth and new programs pop up from time to time in the decades ahead.
Something that people have asked about as the sport at the Division I level and at other levels has expanded, people have asked the question of whether the talent level is going to get watered down, but aren't we in a situation where just the explosion of youth hockey in the U.S. and better training and so forth, isn't that keeping the recruiting trail filled up?
Yeah, I don't think talent level is an issue at all. I really, there's more kids playing junior hockey across America than ever before. I think amateur hockey in the U.S. has never been stronger. You know, Canadian hockey, even though the Canadian Hockey League is doing probably a better job than ever at keeping a lot of their players in the Canadian system, there's still tons of Canadian players who see and want the benefit of playing in an NCAA program. So I don't think that's an issue at all. I certainly think that there's plenty of talent out there to be able to field significant growth from what we see today. I think that what will limit the growth has nothing to do with the talent available. It has more with just the economics of the sport and the geography of the sport.
We're talking with Tom Anastas, head coach at Michigan State, but also a former administrator as a longtime commissioner of the CCHA before it ended its long-time run. Tom, I asked this, I guess, as a Big Ten member, but also maybe as the former administrator, autonomy and everything that's gone on with the Power Five conferences and the Big Ten being one of them. People seem to have an understanding of what that's going to do to football, what that is going to do to basketball. Do you have a gut or some sort of a feeling on what that the independence of conferences and not every team in college hockey being part of those conferences, what that is going to do to the landscape or maybe even the funding and the economics of college hockey?
You know, guys, I really don't. We get updates from time to time. Our athletic director keeps us informed as things are evolving, but I think pretty much everybody is just kind of feeling their way through it as we go. And so how things are administered, how things are legislated, what economic impact there might be and how things may look. I think all of those things are evolving across the board. And right now, from a hockey-only perspective, I just don't know and I haven't heard how it's going to impact us outside of maybe the cost of admission or whatever they're calling that, which will probably impact scholarships. But outside of that right now, I really haven't heard of other things that are kind of being discussed, both on a broad sense and certainly specific to hockey.
Do you get a sense, Tom, from your coaching brethren that there maybe is trepidation or nervousness about how it's going to be handled?
Oh, without a doubt. I think it's like so many things. I think it's probably kind of a healthy paranoia because everybody wants to obviously stay competitive and everybody's worried about what they don't know and how it's going to impact the sport and how it's going to impact their program. But you know what, very honestly, I've been involved in college hockey pretty much most of my adult life. And while the issues are different, I think that healthy paranoia remains the same. I think it always exists, because probably as much in our sport as any, because our sport is made up of not just Division I institutions, but there's Division II and even some Division III institutions that are sponsoring Division I hockey. So I think people at the various levels are concerned, and I think you see that same concern even in the Power Five conferences who have really asked for this autonomy. And so I don't think that's going to change. I think people will figure it out, and you know, we'll just kind of keep forging ahead and make decisions, hopefully in the end, in what's in the best interest of the student athletes and the sport.
We're speaking with Michigan State head coach Tom Anastas. Tom, another one of your roles is serving as the chair of the Ice Hockey Rules Committee for the NCAA. About 3 weeks ago, we had Steve Piotrowski and Frank Cole on for our annual discussion of rules. Just wanted to get your take on the direction the Rules Committee has taken. From our vantage point, it seems that two things are pretty obvious. One, that the committee is working really hard to do things to improve the flow of the game and improve the sport. And secondly, there's been tremendous openness about how rules are determined and how officials should call them. So kind of looking for your take on how things are going with the Rules Committee.
Well, my experience has been darn good. I will tell you that it's my first time over the last 3 years of actually being very active as a member of the Rules Committee. Prior to that, I got to sit in on certain rules sessions as a commissioner for 13 years. But, you know, I have a greater appreciation for the work that the men and women on our committee do. They work real hard. They're passionate about the game. They're very thoughtful and analyzing situations. And, you know, it's amazing for as much thought that goes into coming to conclusions and trying to find the right language to create rules. It's amazing some of the things that pop up that you'd never anticipate. And so it's hard to cover everything, but the group does a really good job at working at it. You know, it's funny, we're on a two-year rule cycle, and so, you know, 1 year you're pretty intense on trying to tweak rules. Another year you're really gathering information, and so the intensity ramps up in the second year. But, you know, I think the NCAA does a good job of trying to get it right. And I think that the staff people, Ty Halpin and Frank Cole and the Steve Piotrowskis and all the volunteers on the committee like myself, I think work real hard. We have good collaboration with the NHL and talking about, you know, looking ahead and what are they talking about, what are they studying, and the same with us. So I think it's a good system. Sometimes we're challenged because our rules book and our cycle adopts rules for all levels of hockey, both men and women at the Division I and the Division III levels. And sometimes it does create a challenge because, you know, some of the programs maybe at certain levels don't have the same authority, management of their facilities that could restrict some of the things that we're able to do. But in spite of that, I still think we find solutions to come to the best conclusions as possible.
Tom, before we let you go, in my conversations, we're going to have Pat Kelleher from USA Hockey on right after you, talking about hockey weekend across America. In my conversation with Dave Fisher from USA Hockey, he said that you were very instrumental in the forming of Hockey Weekend across America 8 years ago when this was all instituted. When you were part of that whole process, what was this the vision that you imagined, this great celebration of hockey through an entire country that we're going to have this weekend?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. I remember you know, years and years ago, I've been fortunate. I grew up in the Detroit area, and even from being a really young kid, I used to watch CBC and Hockey Night in Canada from you know, the youngest age. And you know, they created Hockey Day in Canada, and many years ago when I was with the CCHA, I just kind of copied that idea and put Hockey Day in Michigan in motion, and it was terrific. I got a television partner in Fox Sports Detroit and got the Red Wings involved, and Michigan Amateur Hockey Association and the CCHA at the time kind of took the lead, and we created a program at that time that we called Have Fun, Play Hockey, and we went around the state and tied in with the schools and got kids equipment, and we had in our first year 1,000 new kids try the sport. And I really thought it was an initiative that our staff did a good job with the CCHA, and then USA Hockey, I was on the board at the time, asked me to present the concepts to a broader group at one of their annual congresses, and I shared it, and to Fish's credit and many at USA Hockey, you know, they really took the ball and took it another step and took it national. And I think it's the right thing to do for our country. And now you see the NHL jumping on, you see NBC jumping on, you know, the Play Hockey for Free programs now are all over the country, and thousands of kids are introduced to the sport. So I really think USA Hockey and American Hockey is hitting its stride. And, you know, I was happy and excited to be a small part of, you know, kind of helping that get initiated many years ago.
Well, I can tell you that I have a two-year-old daughter, maybe a little young for it, but I can't wait for the hockey weekend across America where I see her on skates maybe for the first time. Tom Anastas, a big weekend series for Michigan State. You're heading to Wisconsin for two this weekend. Best of luck there. We always appreciate your time, and hope we can talk to you again down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great night, and thanks for having me.
And we'll be back with more of USCHO Live right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gionta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden. Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back with USCHO Live, and as we wrapped with Tom Anastas, we talked about Hockey Weekend across America, which is a great segue, Jim, into this segment.
Yeah, it's a great weekend, and this is the eighth time that USA Hockey will really bring the game to everyone across the U.S. in many different forms. And we're joined now by Pat Kelleher. He's the Assistant Executive Director for Development for USA Hockey. Pat, big weekend coming up for you guys. This must be something, especially from the development end, that you look forward to all the time.
Yeah, it's very special. It's a great celebration of hockey all across the country and at every level. From the NHL through all the college programs, men's and women's, and then down to the grassroots level, and even to the point on Saturday during our Try Hockey for Free program, we'll have over 300 sites around the country that will introduce likely close to 10,000 kids to hockey for the first time. So it's big on every level for us.
That's an unbelievable number, maybe 10,000 people playing hockey for the first time. We were just talking with Tom Anassis, who, as Dave Fisher told me, was very instrumental, and Tom kind of took us through what he did in the Michigan area with this and then how it expanded nationally. But this is something for USA Hockey. Was there ever an understanding that this could become such a big event for USA Hockey?
You know, we it's funny because we certainly hope that it could, and every year that we've done it, the numbers continue to go up and we get more sites that host the Tri Hockey for free day. And, that's become a great focal point on the development side to get more kids and more families introduced to the game. So, it started, Tom did some great things in Michigan, and then we had some other regional Tri Hockey for Free events, and then when we were able to put it together and have the platform of Hockey Weekend across America, where all of our partners, NHL, AHL, college programs, television networks, radio, all of you guys, everyone's promoting it. The numbers continue to go up every time we do it, and we get, greater exposure to families to get their kids to the rink and get them to try the game. And honestly, that's what we believe we have to do all the time.
A big part of, obviously, college hockey is the ability of this game to have spread, and obviously this weekend we'll do that. And I look at the college hockey landscape, and I think I was talking with Joe Bertagna recently. He was talking about 31 years ago when Hockey East first formed and they had their first all-star team. 12 players came from only 3 states in the United States. And last year's all-star team, those 3 states, I believe it was Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and maybe Michigan were the three states, had either 1 or 0 players on the all-star team. And he had places like Texas and California and Florida and those types of states represented. Talk a little bit about how this sport has grown and in the various avenues that have grown this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually sitting in our local rink here in Colorado Springs getting ready to get on the ice for youth hockey practice. And, there's more rinks now across the country. There's more chances for kids to get to play hockey. And that's really what it comes down to. In the 90s, when the NHL expanded to new markets, we saw ice rinks pop up around those NHL franchises in San Jose or Tampa Bay or, in the Miami area of Florida. Certainly the Ducks and the Kings in Southern California. Rinks came aboard. There were more ice sheets, there were more facilities, so more kids to play. And now, we're seeing the benefits of that. We're seeing kids come from those places, Dallas, Texas. We're seeing, not only a lot of kids playing in those markets, but we're seeing some high-end kids and kids that are, frankly, on the path towards college hockey, whether that's at Division I level or Division III level or on the women's side. I mean, we've got players from all over the place, and you see that now whenever there's a national team roster for us on the men's side or the women's side. But it's great to see in leagues, like Hockey East or ECAC and any of the college programs, you see kids from all over the place. And obviously with Arizona State now coming aboard and the recent addition of Penn State, you've got different areas, different schools that are part of now the hockey community.
We're talking with Pat Kelleher from USA Hockey. Of course, Hockey Weekend across America begins this Friday. Pat, step aside from that this weekend, a big summer coming up for USA Hockey when we look at the NHL draft. And you have 3 American players all playing college hockey right now. Jack Eichel, Noah Hanifin, Zach Werenski, who are projected to go very, very high in the draft. That is something that has to really put a lot of pride out in Colorado Springs and that office for USA Hockey to see these guys that many of them have gone through the national team program or have played for national teams with the U.S. sweater on, to see them have such success at the pro level.
Yeah, it is exciting. I mean, it's exciting, that those guys played in the national team program in Ann Arbor. That's huge. And I think everyone knows the job that our people do in Ann Arbor, for going on 17 years now with the highest end kids in that age group. But obviously there's people around the country that got at Jack Eichel to that level at the grassroots community, and Noah Hanifin and Zach Werenski, and dozens of others. So it's great to see those high end guys. It's great that they're playing college hockey. I think, in the U.S. that's our system, right? For amateur athletics, whether it's football or basketball, everyone recognizes college athletics. And so it's great that those guys, as high-end players, this year is excitement to see BU on television on Friday night with Jack playing, or, a BC or Michigan with high-end guys like that. I think there's definitely some buzz, and it's fun to watch. And obviously, all three are unbelievable players, and there'll probably be, you know, 10 more in the next probably 30 picks after those guys. It'll be Americans that'll be drafted. So it's exciting. It's exciting. There's more and more players at the higher levels. There's more and more coming from all over the country, which is fun.
For some of us who are of a little bit older age, I guess, and I suppose I'll put myself in there, the 1980 Olympic win really made a difference. We were sitting, I was a freshman sitting in the dorm room. Somebody had stolen the TV from the lounge, so a whole bunch of us were huddled around a little 12-inch TV. And certainly the movie Miracle talks about the atmosphere at that time. But something very special happening this weekend with Hockey Weekend Across America is a reunion of that 35th anniversary reunion of the living members of that team. That's an amazing thing to pull off. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how special that is?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're around those guys, and I was obviously, I wasn't quite in college yet at that time in 1980, but, you know, anytime you get around those guys, it's special. I was at an event last week in Minneapolis where Dave Christian was there and John Harrington, Neil Broughton. It's just special. It's special to be around those guys. The things that they've done and have them in Lake Placid over Hockey Weekend Across America, 35th anniversary. It's really cool. And you know, those guys are just such phenomenal ambassadors for us at every level. It's exciting. It's real. It's hard to believe it was 35 years ago.
No way.
One other thing I'd like to ask you about, you kind of touched on it in the growth of youth hockey. We were talking before with Tom Anastas about just the wealth of talent there is, and as the college game expands, that there's plenty to fill in. How do you see the impact of your programs in really boosting the college game and really providing a huge storehouse of talent for the college game?
Yeah, I spoke to the college coaches a few years ago at their convention in the spring, and I think one of the things that I said, and I know it's come from various people in our group, our job is to grow participation and produce more high-end kids. And I think as our numbers go up, and through, you know, through our American development model and everything that we're putting forth to youth coaches these days to help them develop kids better, I think we're going to see more Americans at the highest levels and more Americans, you know, pointed towards college hockey programs, again, on the men's and women's side. And it's great. I mean, that's certainly what we all want to see.
There's a stat, and we're talking with Pat Kelleher from USA Hockey, and a stat that I was thrown yesterday, and this is just stunning to me. We talk a lot about Division I hockey, but club hockey is something that I don't think enough people understand how much of an impact it has on college campuses in the United States. The first club teams of the American College Hockey Association, 15 charter members back in 1991. Today there are 418 teams in 49 of the 50 states, including 36 women's teams playing club hockey. It's so easy to focus on the Division I men's and women's that you see on TV all the time, but this is a big part of hockey in the United States, club hockey at the college level.
It's huge. I mean, not every, you know, there's only 59 schools playing Division I men's hockey, and we have, you know, 300,000, close to 300,000 boys between the ages of 5 and 18 playing hockey. They're not all going to play Division I. They're not all going to play Division III. And so to have college club is huge for the sport because those are people, I mean, those are kids that are paying to play hockey to represent their school through 4 years of college. And what happens is they stay with it. They stay in the game. They come out, finish in school. They're people, just like anyone that plays college, hopefully, they're going to be the ones that are the coaches of the future. Or they're going to be playing, for sure, they're playing adult leagues. And those are key components to make an ice rink operation run, to have those adult leagues that are healthy and strong. But, you know, to have players that come through those programs that can come back to the game and give back ultimately and get their kids back in the game, it's a huge factor. And the level of hockey is pretty good. You see those, we've seen some of those teams, and there's kids that end up at a club program for one reason or another that are pretty high-level hockey players. So it's grown quite a bit. And it's, you know, they do a great job with it. It's not, you know, it's not a fly-by-night deal. Those are well-run programs with excellent coaching And they've done a tremendous job with the club program, and it's a huge part of our membership and a huge part of the future of the hockey in America.
Yeah, I know a couple of guys that I went to school with back in the 90s who are coaching these club teams, and they have just as much a passion as any other guy that I've met as a college coach. Pat, big weekend, obviously, this weekend with Hockey Weekend across America. We wish you the best of luck, and we really appreciate your time. Pat Kelleher from USA Hockey. Have a lot of fun this weekend.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate the support. Take care.
And we'll be back to wrap up this week's episode of USCHO Live right after this.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com.
USA Hockey for the 8th Annual Hockey Weekend Across America, presented by CCM, this weekend. Celebrate hockey with the rest of the country by wearing your favorite jersey on Friday, trying hockey for free on Saturday, and honoring your local hockey heroes on Sunday. For more details, including information on exciting CCM giveaways, visit HockeyWeekendAcrossAmerica.com. That's HockeyWeekendAcrossAmerica.com.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Goal!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/Frozen Four and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
We're back to wrap up USCHO Live, and we're grateful for the support of the NCAA for our program through the rest of the season. Don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there, as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29th and continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live, as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/Frozen Four to make a date with champions. I'm Ed Trefsker with Jim Conley. And Jim, time to wrap things up. Really appreciated both our guests this week. It's nice to talk a little bit in depth of some of the stuff behind the scenes and talk not just the immediate things about the sport, but the sport in general.
Yeah, and this really is such a special weekend for hockey in the United States. So two guys that are one who was very formative in Tom Anasto of Hockey Weekend Across America, and Pat Keller, who is on the ground with USA Hockey right now. Great to have them be part of our show tonight.
Well, not only is it a great weekend, but a lot of stuff going on this weekend. Some league championship regular season titles could be wrapped up this weekend. Three teams have that opportunity: Robert Morris, Quinnipiac, and Boston University in the next to last weekend in those conferences. But then there's a bunch of games going on between ranked teams. Number 11 Quinnipiac hosting number 13 Yale in what is becoming a pretty good rivalry there in Connecticut.
All you have to do is play for a national title against each other. And when your schools are that close, I mean, it's just like Boston University and Boston College. Michigan State might be a little further geographically, but if those two teams played for a national title, it would be just the same. So when we had 2 years ago Yale and Quinnipiac playing in that national title game, you knew at that point if there wasn't already an unbelievable rivalry, it was going to develop, and it certainly has. And those, that will be a packed house when those two teams play this weekend down in Hamden at High Point Solutions Arena. I always think of that as kind of an unthought of rivalry that people, it's just not old enough for people to understand how much impact there will be, but the emotion between those teams, especially with both of them playing very good hockey. Quinnipiac's going to be in a position, I'm not sure if they can do it on Friday when they play, but at some point this weekend they're going to be in a position to potentially wrap up that that regular season title in the ECAC. So that just puts even more everything you can add to a game in a series like that just puts more weight and more drama into it.
The other ECAC matchup between ranked teams has teams going in a little bit different direction. St. Lawrence, which has surged in the last half of the season, at number 20 against number 14 Harvard, which has hit a few bumps in the road as of late.
And I've mentioned that, you know, I mentioned it last week that Harvard needs to get back to their winning weeks. And they had a very good weekend last weekend. Colgate has been a very good team. They beat them and then fought to a 3-3 tie against Cornell on Saturday night. And, you know, it's a game that maybe slipped away. They had a lead they got the lead with 5 minutes left in that game, and then it only took a little less, over a minute for Cornell to tie that game. So maybe a little bit of frustration, but it's good to see Harvard starting to take points again, because after such a hot first half of the season, I saw them play a couple of times in late November and early December, and I thought that they were just a dominant team. They have too much talent there to not finish this season out and be extremely competitive. So a very big game this Friday night against St. Lawrence, because that's a St. Lawrence team that has played some very good hockey since Christmas.
In Hockey East, a great matchup, number 10 BC on Friday against number 16 UMass Lowell.
Yeah, and, you know, Lowell has had its tough times of late. I believe they're 3-7-1 in their last 11, but they scored 7 goals on Saturday night, and they came in bunches. They, you know, they had a 5-goal first period. I think it was 5 goals in about 15 minutes that they scored, and it's something that team just hasn't been able to accomplish this season. And they're going to play a BC team that they beat once, but it was the first night of the season. I think it was October 9th when these teams played. So much has happened, and this becomes a very big game when you talk about which team is going to maybe get that top 4 spot in Hockey East, and thus a first-round bye, and then home ice in the quarterfinals. So both of those teams have a lot riding on this one, and both of them needed for the momentum into the final weekend of the season, as it is their only game for both teams this weekend upcoming.
And the other matchup between ranked teams, number 6 Miami hosting number 7 Minnesota Duluth. This is the kind of matchup that I'm sure that the founders and the teams in the NCHC were looking forward to when they formed the league.
I think so. You know, right now you have, I think it's 4 or 5 teams in the NCHC that are ranked, and I'm pretty sure there's 4 in the top 10 of the country. So you knew that you were going to have a ton of really, really solid teams. I think it actually might be, now that I think about 5 teams in the top 10, but I just looked at Miami's schedule. They have Minnesota Duluth, the number 7 team this week. They have 2 against Denver out on the road, the number 9 team the week after that. And they close the season against current number 1 North Dakota. Wow, talk about make or break time for Miami. They're an 18-9-1 team right now. If they finish this maybe 22 or 23 wins after the regular season, you're talking about a potential number 1 seed in the NCAA tournament. So this is some big hockey coming up for Miami. It all begins at home this weekend with Minnesota Duluth.
And then, of course, next Monday, and looking at the weather forecast for the Boston area, snow showers, but less than an inch called for by the forecasters. Finally, the bean pot.
Finally, a chance to play. And I think that you could probably throw a blizzard at them and they would be playing that game, even if they played only in front of 18 fans. They need to play that game and get it done. I think we're supposed to get 10 inches of snow here in Boston, maybe on Sunday, and then into Monday it'll be lightened up. Hopefully they can get everything cleaned up. But it's been a kind of a snowpocalypse here in the greater Boston area. I just saw snowfall totals for the country and 3 cities around the Boston area, Lowell, Worcester, and Boston, are in the top 4 of the country, and of course the other city that's in there is Buffalo. So if you can be in that type of company, I don't think you want to be there, but it's been an interesting winter out here, and it'll be finally nice to see that those beanpot teams get a chance to finish off what they started really 3 weeks ago.
I guess I shouldn't complain about the 78 inches of snow we've had.
We're close, though. We're not that far off, so I think that you're just much more used to it than we are here in Boston.
Yeah, I think that's it. You get used to knowing what to do with it. Well, Jim, it sounds like a great weekend of college hockey, and we'll look forward to hearing your report from the Beanpot, and maybe I can shed some light on Robert Morris next time on USCHO Live. We hope you can join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern live, or if you can't join us live, you can catch the podcast shortly after the program. So look forward to next week, and we definitely thank our guests, Tom Anastas and Pat Kelleher, for their great comments and thoughts tonight.
Yeah, and if you can get out to a game somewhere this weekend, this is the weekend to do it. Hockey Weekend Across America. Live hockey live. That's really what you should be taking advantage of this weekend.
For Jim Connolly, I'm Ed Trefsker. We'll see you next time on USCHO Live from USCHO.com.